You don't have to worry, Tom. Thank you. I appreciate it. When I wrote this 3-4 weeks ago, it was about 20 minutes. And the more I thought about what I was going to talk about today, the shorter and shorter it got, because it's really not as complicated. And probably what I should have done before I came up right now is breathed into a paper bag, because after what Ronnie told me, as a producer, boy, once again in that original slide, how many producers do we have here in the room? Raise your hand if you're a seed stock or a commercial producer. Okay, good. We've got a fair number, because I tell you what, when I watched what Ronnie had to say, it's easy for me to come out of here, go home, pull the covers up over my head at night, and say, I'm not sure about this cattle business. And I think that's where we all take a big deep breath as producers, and we identify what we can and cannot do, and where we are and where we want to go. And that's just a little brief background as I start what I'm going to talk to you about today, which is 10 minutes. Start your watches right now, 10 minutes. The objectives of my presentation are really, as a producer, to tell you where I've been and what I've done as I look back, and then maybe what I think I'm going to need to do in the future. And I started in the registered Angus business in 1984. Now, just briefly, I'm going to step back and say that I attended Iowa State, got a degree in animal science. Dr. Richard Willem taught a class that I had the privilege to take, and it wasn't about animal breeding, it was about your livestock heritage, but it had an impact on me, so I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Dr. Richard Willem. But I started in the Angus breeding cattle business in 1984. I'm not a third-generation rancher or a second-generation rancher. I'm a first-generation, and I was born and raised on a diversified family farm in eastern Iowa. So maybe a little different background than a lot of other people have come from. And I remember sitting in the office of Emmett Haynes, who was then department head of animal science at Iowa State when I was there. And I told him what I wanted to do, and he said, "You don't want to do that." Because really, the upside potential, if you remember back from 1977 to 1981, those were the years that I was in college. Remember 1981. And as a farm kid in Iowa, we saw lots of long faces, lots of despair. I almost went into banking. I interviewed with two banks the spring of 1981 when I graduated. And I couldn't, as I sat there, I couldn't believe that I might sit across from a guy like my dad, Wynton McCullough, who was 60 years old, and say, "Tell you what, Wynton, I'm not sure if we can renew your line of credit this year." Because he watched his land value go from $3,000 an acre down to $1,200. So I left college, spent a year coaching the judging team at Virginia Tech, actually was there when Ronnie Green was there. And then I took a job with the American Ag Association and was director of junior activities for a year and a half. It was 1983. And if you remember that time again, it was kind of the low of the industry, okay? And so I decided to jump ship and start raising Angus cattle. And we began our focus with Angus cattle at that time. I found a man who had some equity and capital, which I had none of. All I had was sweat equity. His name was Dr. Daniel Borgen and his wife, Ann. We started with 35 cows and 400 acres. And the best thing that he did was he trusted me. So we set on a course, and we believed that it was possible to select Angus cattle that would grade choice and avoid yield grade discounts at 14 months of age or less, and then also their heifer mates would calve unassisted in a 60-day period. The other good thing that happened in 1984, when I was starting in this business, the American Angus Association rolled out the objective measures called expected progeny differences, and they helped. Because I couldn't imagine at that time starting up in the business with just the subjective process of eyeballing cattle. Now, you have to remember, I came from a background of livestock judging. I mean, when I was a kid, when Dr. Gary Minish judged our county fair at Clinton County, Iowa, and that guy walked across there and slapped the grand champion steer, and I was about sixth grade, I said, you know what? Boy, I'd like to be like that guy. And so that was my roots. My roots were, I really firmly believed I could tell by looking which ones were the best ones. But because of industries like BIF, the researchers, educators, extension people in this room today, I learned one key fundamental lesson, which was, I don't know by looking at cattle which ones are the best ones. And fortunate for me at that time, we had the expected progeny difference. Roy Wallace came and gave a visit early on in our career, and he whipped out his Big Chief tablet, and he drew the bell-shaped curve. And I remember now why it was important to have a basic understanding of Statistics 101. Because that's the basis of expected progeny differences, and I'm here to just say, to make the point, when we talk about the last 40 years, the tools that the people in this room have presented me are relevant, have been relevant, because for 23 years, we have now grown that operation that started with 35 cows and 400 acres. We have no other source of income, okay? We don't raise corn and soybeans for cash crop. We don't have any other source. Again, Dan and Ann Borgen provided startup equity and startup capital. Today we have 250 cows, and we have three cooperator herds, and we support three households. Okay, I don't have the slides, I don't have anything to show you the breakout, but I can tell you that we pay all of our principal and interest and retire that debt in addition to purchasing capital improvements and have depreciation accounted for on 250 registered cows. We have about 70 head of cattle produced by cooperator herds, and then we market them. We market Angus bulls at a year of age, females, some embryos, and semen. So, the point is, I think one of the reasons that I embraced change over the last 23 years is because 100% of the revenue that I had to live on was generated with this business. And I think when we start scratching our head in this industry and say, how come we're slow to adapt, I think some of the statistics, Kent, that you showed up there really, really do explain why there's a large percentage of our industry that are not in it for profit. Now, back to my comment about hyperventilating as I watched Ronnie's presentation regarding genomics, genetic markers, and where to from here. Actually, I thought of a quote. And there's one thing, I've got three kids and they've all graduated from high school. They're almost done with college, so I've got a little time, and there's one game that I do like to play. I like sports, and I figured since I could play the game till I couldn't walk, I'd learn to play the game of golf, and I like it. There's a guy named Harvey Pienick who wrote a book or has a compilation of thoughts. It's called Little Red Book of Golf. And when I think about where we're at, I think of a comment, a quote from that. And this is what Harvey said. He said, the natural inclination is to begin to overdo the change that's brought success. So we all tend to exaggerate the change in an effort to improve even more, and soon we become lost and confused. And I think as we go forward in the business, as producers, we're not going to wad up and throw away our cow herds because they have the wrong combination of genes, okay? It doesn't mean we're going to ignore this technology. It means that we need to engage. We need to think critically, continue to think critically, continue to have an open mind, but maintain some sound logic as we go forward because we're producing the bulls that go into our commercial herds. Change can't be exaggerated. Okay? Because if I all of a sudden decide that, by golly, corn is high priced, my cows are too big, I think I'm going to go out and use a different bull tomorrow and change it all right away. Now, I'll make that change if I have science-based objective tools to make the change. But I'm not just simply going to do it because they say big is bad, small is better. Okay? Not all big cattle are bad. Not all small cattle are good. We've got better objective measures to make that call. So I just caution everybody as we move forward in that. Now, moving on, you say we're at a crossroads. Absolutely, we're at a crossroads, okay? There's no doubt. And the things that go through my mind, and it isn't new. It isn't a revelation, okay? I think we need to revisit the concept of producer networks. We've talked about it for a long time, and it's nothing new. Networks have a way for producers to be competitive, okay, in this large commodity business that we're in. And some, a lot of us as producers argue that we're going to give up our independence, and we will give up our independence, but because we represent such a small percentage anyway, we need to work together. Okay? And this sounds a little bit like Cub Scouts, but it's true. I think we all need to do a little better job of getting together, exchanging ideas, recognizing that one person's difference of opinion is not a personal attack. Okay? It's okay if I ask Mark a question and he tells me what he thinks, and if I disagree, it doesn't mean I don't think Mark's a good guy. I just disagree and let's talk about it. Because we think we're independent, but if we really look at our system, the consumer decides whether we even sell our product. Packers and feedlots determine our price. Sure, there's some arrangements, but for the most part, packers and feedlots determine the price, and then lenders ultimately control whether we expand or not. So we're really not that independent, and it might be better if we were a little more interdependent. The final issue is something that 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago was not even on my radar screen. Okay? I grew up in a farm family where the guy that you elected to do your job went about his business. Mom and Dad didn't teach us about becoming politically involved. But in reference to the comments that Kent has made, I mean, we as a producer group can't overlook the fact that this business is changing. You know, and I read the Congressional Research Service report for Congress that was entitled Animal Agriculture 2007 Farm Bill Issues. Every one of us here could go to the website and find it. And you know what I realized? I realized that animal production, and specifically beef production, might be losing a battle for science-based decision-making by our federal government. Members and committees of Congress represent people, animals, and the environment. And these decisions and the resulting actions by our committees are based on a majority of votes. And we represent a small number of votes. So we desperately need leaders in our science community and those of us that are producers to engage, to come back to the table, so that members of Congress, you know, and we think, what I think doesn't matter. Well, if we continue on not becoming involved, it will pass us by. But members of Congress need to make decisions based on sound science, regarding the production and marketing of farm animals, or else we may find ourselves relying on imports for our food needs. So, the past 40 years, the past system of education, research, and extension has worked. Okay, I am living proof of someone who just started in 1984, and it's working. It's a successful, viable business with no other means to support it but this breeding cattle business. I'm not going to stay rooted in my past practices. I am going to change, but I think it's time that we do a little better job in this industry of reengaging and working in interdependent relationships. And I say we can still maintain independence, but let's come back to the table so that we can be assured that Ronnie's kids and my kids and those of you other people out there, grandchildren, they may not be involved, but the U.S. agriculture production system is the envy of the world, and it's because we have independent producers who care about their business. So let's go boldly. Let's reengage. Let's continue to study our lessons so that we can come back here. Some of us can. We may not have the longevity that Dave does. Some of us can come back in 40 years and say, what a great 80 years it's been at BIF. With that, thank you. Appreciate it. Time to go to the restroom, right?